Well, current average draft position has four third base eligible players being drafted in the first 11 picks. That includes Manny Machado, who's also shortstop eligible, perhaps for the last season. Unless, you know, J.J. Hardy gets hurt. Welcome to the show. This is our third base preview for 2017. Adam Azer, Heath Cummings, Scott White. All right, guys. This position's awesome. We've got some great players. And I'm looking forward to talking about it. I hope you guys feel the same way.
Oh, yeah. Love third base.
I've got a very relevant third base stat for you.
Oh, I love it. I love the Heath Cummings stats. And I never know about them either. They're just like a nice little present every now and then.
Yep.
All right, hit me with it.
Well, you know, we talked a lot about how the home run increase was at second base and shortstop.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest increase in dongs in 2016 came from the third base position.
Really?
There were 747 home runs by a third baseman in 2015, 938 in 2016. That's an increase of 191, and that was the biggest increase.
Is that the biggest percentage increase or just the biggest increase?
Biggest increase.
Yeah, I mean, and then you got a guy like Evan Longoria and Adrian Beltre where you feel like you know what to expect from them. And the two of them hit like 36 and 32 home runs or something right. And it's just, what? Where did that come from? So, but speaking of Longoria, if you want to put things in perspective, 2013 was his last really good year, Longoria, as a third baseman, where he finished fourth in fantasy in points in Roto. Longoria scored the same amount of fantasy points in 2016 as he did in that great 2013 season. He went from being fourth at the position to eighth in points and tenth in Roto. There are more examples, but obviously hitting has just gotten better, so players have to get better. And you know what? I want to be kind of bold today, all right? I want you guys to attach yourselves to players as players you really want, players you don't really want, putting a lot of pressure on you. But give me a third baseman you love this year. What do you think?
Love is kind of stretching it, but I will say...
This is not bold, Scott.
Well, it's not a position to go bold at because there's so much depth, but we'll get into that. I think the one who I am most often winding up with and am happy to is Todd Frazier.
Because I was about to say, because the next question is a player you can't see yourself drafting.
And
I feel like Frazier for me has gone from the player I would love to draft to the player that I have no interest in drafting. Because he's already dealing with a finger injury that popped up last year and a possible oblique injury, which we just found out yesterday. So, like, I feel it on the analysis. He was probably underrated. I'm worried, though, about these injuries. It's early.
And I'm not even sure if he's that underrated. He's got a seventh round ADP.
He's going kind of high, but not in our leagues.
Well, I can only speak to my own personal experience, and it seems like people want Rendon more. It seems like people want Justin Turner more a lot of times. And Todd Frazier, I mean, obviously he didn't disappoint with the power. He's kind of in one of the very elite players as far as that goes. He had a .236 BABIP last year. It's a lot of fly balls. He's going to be a low BABIP guy, but I think that's going above and beyond just being a low BABIP guy. That's insanely low. So I think there's a good chance he gets back to that .250, .260 batting average, with, you know, 40 home runs and at least a relevant number of steals.
Yeah. I wrote about Frazier in my regression alert, and he was in the mixed bag section of that piece because I agree with Scott that his batting average is probably going to get back up to the .250 range. I don't think he probably hits 40 home runs again.
Well, look, Frazier hit .255 with 35 home runs in 2015 and .225 with 40 home runs in 2016. In 2015, Frazier was the number 5 third baseman in fantasy. So even if he loses some home runs and gains batting average, it would help. However,
But seriously, that was me trying to meet the exercise.
Okay.
I want to stress that. Like, I'm not paying up for Frazier. It's just... There are a lot of similar third basemen, and he's the one who seems to often fall to me.
I love...
Here it is.
Anthony Rendon. And he has, according to Fantasy Pros, the average draft position that makes me love him even more. Looks like he's going in the late eighth or ninth round. I do not believe we've seen the career year from Rendon last year. I thought it was going to happen last year. And I spent the whole first half of the 2016 season defending calling Anthony Rendon a breakout because he was having just awful batted ball luck while crushing the baseball. In the second half, his luck turned around. He continued to crush the baseball. He's going to have a very good year this year.
After the All-Star break, Rendon hit .291 with a .357 on base, a .508 slugging percentage, 11 home runs, 3 steals of his 12 for the season, 3 steals after the break, 68 games. So, yeah, that's pretty good. That is, let's see, an .865 OPS. No problems there. And Rendon finished as 11th in points and 12th in roto at the position. He'll be 27 years old in June. All right, a third baseman you just can't see yourself drafting this year. We'll go to you first, Heath.
Well, I probably would have picked Todd Frazier. But let's try to pick somebody different, and I'll say Adrian Beltre.
Okay.
I'm an ageist. He's, 38 years old. He's now battling a calf injury in camp. No, thank you.
What's his ADP?
It's right there with Frazier, just ahead of him. Looks like early 7th, late 6th.
Yeah, I'm actually okay with him if he actually lasts there. I feel like he's typically gone much earlier than Frazier for us. And, you know, like 5th round, 4th round, it's hard to justify there knowing the age risk. But, I mean, that's kind of the level he produced at last year. So just at face value. You know, I think dropping him to round 7 is enough of a discount. I think, you know, I actually kind of want to say Rendon because I know you're in my leagues. And because although those second half stats sound good in a vacuum, they sound like Rendon recapturing that 2014 form where he was being drafted as a second rounder in fantasy the next year. Just with the changing landscape, I don't know that they stand out that much. They're basically numbers like Justin Turner put up last year, which, you know, Justin Turner's a good player. Justin Turner would be a fine starter in fantasy, but also kind of not somebody to really get excited about.
I'd rather have Turner than Beltre or Frazier as well. So
really?
Wow.
Yeah. For the value or just like you would draft him ahead of those two?
Well, I'm not going to draft those two and I'll take Justin Turner.
Right.
Okay, so, okay, but
I've got Turner ranked ahead of those guys.
Yeah.
You do?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Justin Turner, I would expect to have maybe not quite as good a year as he did last year, but a very good year. I think Frazier and Beltre are both huge risks.
Because of injuries? Because Turner's not young either. Turner's 32.
Beltre 32, 6 years younger than 38.
Something of an injury history himself.
But he's older than, is he older than Todd Frazier? I mean.
Probably about the same age.
Frazier is 30. So I don't.
So what's the risk with Frazier? What's he going to lose from last year?
Well, with what's weird is how he did what he did last year. The 40 home runs, he had a 19% home run to fly ball rate, which is his best mark since 2011. He had a 31% hard contact rate, which is his worst mark since 2012.
Okay.
Like that with that type of profile, you would expect him to be down around a 10 or 12% home run to fly ball rate. And for somebody that's selling out for hitting home runs.
Right. But that's just 1 year. What about the 35 home run year the year before?
Right.
Let's say he doesn't hit 40, he hits 35.
That's not really
going to change much.
But if his profile looks like it did last year, I'd expect him to hit more like 30 or 28.
But why would you assume the oddity would repeat itself?
Why are you assuming the 40 home run oddity is going to
work? We know that Todd Frazier has serious power.
What's that?
We know Todd Frazier has serious power.
He does. But
we don't need to doubt his power.
But we're talking about a 19, 29, 35, 40. I think 29 is just as much in play as 40 is this year.
Well, he hit .273 that year, so maybe the batting average, the batting average keeps going down as the home runs keep going up, so maybe one's a trade-off if he's selling out for home runs.
I think it is. The risk, in my opinion, with Frazier is he continues trying to sell out for home runs, but with his profile from last year, he just doesn't hit as many.
Well, then wouldn't he change something?
I don't know.
But Scott, can I ask you?
Easily do that?
Scott, are you not concerned about the preseason injuries? Because we know sometimes this stuff carries over. It has an effect. It's only February 23rd. I get that. But
if he tore his meniscus, I'd be concerned. Strained oblique in February. not really changing things for me.
All right.
Strange oblique is one of the, that's one of the scariest injuries there are.
It's rest and it gets better.
Oh, yeah. I hate obliques. All right. Let's go to our next question. Rank the top three third basemen. And by the way, Machado, I don't know if we want to include him in today's discussion. Is, you know, we talked about him yesterday at shortstop, and you'll likely play him at shortstop, but Machado is being drafted ahead of Donaldson. Right now, ADP, average draft position, has Chris Bryant third, Arenado fourth or fifth, Manny Machado eighth overall, Donaldson 11th overall. So how would you guys rank your top three? Might as well do top four with Machado in there. Top four, rank them.
Mine's changed in the last week, and it may change back, but if I had to draft right now with Donaldson, Bryant, and Arenado were so close, I had them back to back to back in my overall rankings, that I've dropped Donaldson to third in that group. So Arenado, Bryant, Donaldson, Machado.
Yeah, I have the exact same order. I'm dropping Donaldson one spot. He was already behind Arenado for me, but now he's also behind Bryant.
Why do you guys rank the three of them, and now Donaldson we know is dealing with a calf injury. Why do you put them ahead of Machado? How clear is that to you?
Pretty clear, for the kind of the reason you brought up yesterday, that Machado having a 37 home run season last year was the 18th best hitter in points, and I don't even remember what it was in Roto.
22nd in Roto.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously the shortstop eligibility makes him more valuable beyond just where that finish was, but that's kind of where I draw the line. Those three third basemen are MVP caliber players, and Machado just, like, he's a little below that in terms of actual production.
Yeah, I've got him like the very next pick, so okay. I don't have a lot of separation at all.
Okay. Now, if there's one thing to keep in mind, he's going to walk less, it seems, than the others. Right. Maybe not Arenado. Yeah, even based on last year, Machado way in the back of the line in terms of walks. So OBP leagues, points leagues, keep that in mind. Okay, moving on. Give me your favorite of this group. All kind of going in the same rounds, draft-wise, at least in our leagues. Bregman, Beltre, Seager, Rendon. Alex Bregman, Adrian Beltre, Kyle Seager, Anthony Rendon. Who's your favorite? Scott.
My favorite is Kyle Seager.
Boo.
Never, ever lets us down, and he seems to get incrementally better year after year. I'm not even sure he needs to get any better from here. The leap he made last year, it seemed like he was kind of in line with the league as a whole. His power numbers taking that next step forward, and he was just really good. And like, you draft him and there's nothing to worry about. He's your starting third baseman. He's going to be a quality starting third baseman, and you'll live happily ever after.
I've got Seager one spot in my overall rankings behind Rendon. So I love Seager as well. I've already told you why I love Rendon.
Wow. Okay. So Seager, yeah, I think last year I was touting Seager as like the safest pick in fantasy, and he finishes. These are his finishes last 4 years. Kyle Seager in points leagues at third base, fifth, sixth, seventh, seventh. In roto leagues at third base last 4 years, Seager finished seventh, sixth, seventh, and ninth last year. And that's fine. I love it, but I'm surprised that you guys are not going with Bregman in that group. I feel like he has the most upside. He was 2-for-38 to start the season, but only 10 Ks. And then he hit 313 with a 931 OPS in his last 39 games. 20 steals in the minors in 146 games last year. So I don't know. That's the guy I would love to go with, Alex Bregman, especially at his ADP round 8. But he goes in like round 5 in our drafts in a 12-team league, maybe early round 6. That's a tough price to pay, but I don't know. I was a little surprised you guys went with the safe guy instead of the upside.
He's the upside guy, yes, but I prefer safe in the early rounds because, like, as long as you don't mess those picks up and then you hit on a few late rounders, like, that's how you really set your team apart, I feel like. But
what are the Bregman, early rounds though? How early? Because what if you're in round 7 and you're looking at these guys?
No, round six, I start to think about drafting Bregman. I don't absolutely take him there. It depends what else is available.
Okay.
Round seven, yeah, round eight, definitely. But like the thing about Bregman, yes, a lot of upside. His minor league, like he was probably the most productive minor leaguer since Chris Bryant. And all year we kept waiting for him to get called up, and it took forever for that to finally happen because he was just way too good for the minor leagues. But apart, you know, even putting aside that really rough start in the majors that obviously skews his batting average, he struck out in a quarter of his bats. And that was something he didn't do in the minors. He made, like, he had more walks than strikeouts last year. So I just worry if, like, I'm a little worried about just saying that the numbers he put up after that 0 for whatever stretch are what we should expect from Bregman going forward, because that's what he did in the minors, because he still was striking out a lot more than he did in the minors.
Well,
I'm
you
just
have
not
to expect
sure
that.
How I'm not, yeah, you do expect that, but I'm not sure what it translates to in actual production. I mean, if he, like, I could see a scenario where he's hitting 270 with 25 home runs this year, which would be a great season. It's not like you wouldn't start him with those numbers, but it would make him kind of like
Kyle Seager.
Well, no, worse than that. It would make him more like Justin Turner or the bad version of Anthony Rendon.
I mean, we expect Kyle Seager to hit 25 home runs this year, don't we?
He could hit more.
Well, yes, but like 270, 25 home runs is the quintessential Kyle Seager season.
If I were nitpicking, I'd say it's more like 27, 28 home runs.
He's okay, had well, more than 26 once.
Well,
in his
maybe
whole career.
I picked bad numbers, okay? But you understand the general.
No, but what
idea
I'm saying is like,
I'm saying.
Like you're saying he could be boring and hit 270 with 25 home runs.
He
and that's
be,
Kyle
okay,
Seager.
Okay, if you want to get down and dirty with the specifics,
I'm not.
Maybe
sure.
It's Kyle Seager. So pick whatever numbers sound boring to you. That's what I'm saying Bregman could be, okay?
No,
like,
but
I'm
think
saying.
I think Heath has a point here that if boring Alex Bregman, how much worse than Kyle Seager is boring Alex Bregman?
I don't know. What would be bad? What would be boring for you? Say those numbers.
I don't know. I don't know.
260 with 18 home runs.
But
that
would be bad.
That
would be bad.
Okay.
Not boring.
Are you happy now?
So Scott, I think.
No, I'm just trying to figure out like what you think his expectation is.
I think you're taking this the wrong way. Bad?
I don't know. I don't know what his expectation is because I don't think it's as simple as translating his minor league numbers because he struck out a lot more.
Of course, it is not. It is not the same. I just. You know, Seager is the ultimate safe pick. I don't know that there's much of a chance of him finishing higher than like fifth, and that would probably mean some guys are gonna struggle. If you want upside, you go Bregman, and yes. I think you took this as like an assault, and it just seemed like no, that wasn't the case. We were just trying to say because Heath has Seager ahead of Bregman, right?
Yeah.
So he agrees with you, but
I'm much more worried about Bregman's floor, which I think is pretty low.
His floor.
Yeah, because the Astros have a ton of hitters, and he could very easily start off the year in a slump. I mean, the guy's got like, 700 minor league plate appearances or something.
Right. Okay. All right, so next question. Best chance to break out. Michael Franco, Miguel Sano, Jose Ramirez. Michael Franco, Miguel Sano, Jose Ramirez. Best chance to break out.
I think it's, for me, it's pretty easily Miguel Sano. I don't know that Jose Ramirez has anything left besides what he did last year.
Okay. Which put him ninth in points, 11th in Roto, by the way, Jose Ramirez.
Right. I think Miguel Sano could, kind of like Bregman, he could be a top five third baseman this year. You look at what he's done early in his career with as hard as he hits the ball and as often as he hits the ball that hard. He should be a 23-24% home run to fly ball rate guy. Okay. It's just how hard he hits the ball. If he could cut the strikeouts even down to 30%, it could be a monster season.
And these are third basemen who are outside the top 12 in the rankings. So, well, in some cases, like Heath's the high guy on Sano, but Scott and Chris have Sano like 15th. So my point is just real quick. you're in a corner infield league, very good chance that you're filling your corner infield with a third baseman and not a first baseman. If you're going to compare like Adrian Gonzalez to Miguel Sano, I don't know. I mean, look, it's certainly conceivable that Gonzalez has a better year, but you probably want to take the chance on Sano on draft day.
Well, I think third base is really the difference between roto and points leagues is really exaggerated with a lot of these guys in the teens at third base. Like Sano, I'm really excited about drafting in roto. He's well down my rankings in points.
Okay, Scott, best chance to break out in that group, Franco, Sano, Ramirez.
Well, I think probably the higher percentage chance would be Franco because he has that interesting skill set of the big power and the high contact rate. He has other issues that might limit his ceiling that Sano doesn't have. The fact he doesn't walk at all or walks very little and has such a poor supporting cast, he pretty much has to sustain himself. So he depends on big power to measure up in today's landscape. So, but I do think he's a higher probability case than Sano just because of the comparative strikeout rates for the two. I would take either as a utility player over like an Adrian Gonzalez, for instance. And it wouldn't even matter the format because like in points leagues, like there are so few hitters being rostered.
Yeah.
That like the safe guys, like there's no reason to draft to spend a late round pick on a safe guy. If you don't think he has much upside.
Does Jose Ramirez fit that bill? Cause you know, he was good last year. Very good. But is he just kind of safe and boring, or is there something more there?
He is safe and boring, but he's safe and boring on a higher level than Adrian Gonzalez is. He's, you know, his safe and boring made him what, 11th, you said last year?
9th in points, 11th in roto, or maybe that switched.
Yeah, so that, I mean, obviously he needs to be drafted to start for some team, whether it's at third base or outfield, and it may very well be outfield instead of third base. In fact, I kind of feel like, you know, I don't want to bury the lead on third base. Third base, the depth at third base is incomparable to not just this year, but any time I've been, as long as I've been doing this, I can't remember an infield position as deep as third base is this year. Yeah, I'm struggling to get Michael Franco in my top 20 at the position, and he was one of everybody's favorite breakout players last year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, let's okay, Franco's very interesting to me, and so is Sano, and here's something, you know, to keep in mind. Just reading an article on Philly.com about Michael Franco. First of all, his manager loves him, thinks he's going to be a perennial all-star. Okay, whatever. But they obviously are very high on him. Age 20, he's 24 years old, and so is Miguel Sano, and I think Jose Ramirez is as well. At age 23, Nolan Arenado hit .287 with 18 home runs. That's a really good year for a 23-year-old. Age 24, Nolan Arenado hit 42 home runs. So this is kind of, you know, like Michael Franco hitting .255 with 25 home runs last year was actually a pretty good year for a 23-year-old third baseman. You know, guys are getting better younger now, and he's entering age 24 season. So is Miguel Sano, and like I think Jose Ramirez is as well. Yeah, he is 24 years old. I don't know when he turns 25. So I don't know. Could be a good year for all three of those guys. And yeah, Franco not being in the top 20 does speak to the, or if you know, he is for some, he is not for necessarily for Scott.
He's borderline, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, he speaks to the
depth
of the position.
Technically 18th, 17th now, but it took some effort to get him there. My initial look at third base had him outside the top 20, which was crazy.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right, Adam. 290 and 30 home runs this year would not be anywhere close to outside of the range of possibilities for Franco.
No, and we talk about, for Franco, you know, we talk about sophomore slumps, guys getting worse, and then rebounding like Anthony Rizzo or Eric Hosmer earlier in their careers. Franco, as in his first season, he did a lot of it in June with one big month, but he hit .280 with 14 home runs in 80 games, and I think he was on pace to be like a top five third baseman if he had played a full season. So, you know, if not top five, is very good. So anyway, I think fantasy owners should really make an effort to get Franco, to get Sano on some teams at a cheap cost and just see where it goes.
Yeah.
And better in roto for sure.
Cause and the other thing you look at how his BABIP went down 26 points last year, which is pretty much the difference in his BABIP or his batting average. It went down 25 points, but Franco had a higher hard hit rate and a higher line drive rate.
Okay. So a couple more, or one more question. Is Yoan Moncada worth drafting?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think he is the expected minor leaguer who is the guy you want to draft late and stash this year. You know, kind of like we've pretty much done this with a minor leaguer every year since Mike Trout showed how valuable that approach could be. It was Will Myers first year, then George Springer the next, then Chris Bryant the next, and all of those worked out great. Last year, probably the closest example was Byron Buxton, and it didn't work out so well. But, you know, for the cost of the late round pick, it's kind of what I was saying about how, you know, if it's a shallow enough league, knowing the kind of replacements you could find on waivers, like, go crazy with those late picks.
Yeah, I guess my problem is I don't know that we see Moncada before mid-June or later. I don't know that we have a lot of evidence that suggests Moncada is ready for the major leagues. I'm not trying to discount him as a prospect or say I know more than the experts on prospects. I totally agree he's one of the best in the game.
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking about a guy that struck out 31% of the time in double A.
Yeah.
And just has 200 plate appearances above high A.
Yeah.
So in a league where I have several bench spots or in a roto league, yeah, I think he's worth a very end of the draft pick, but I'm not going to take him in a standard points league with only 21 rounds.
Well, like the unknowns are, they're unknown. You're right. We don't know when we're going to see him. We don't know if we'll be ready, but I'm saying the upside is worth it when the cost is just he's occupying a bench spot for a couple months potentially. I mean, we don't know when he's going to get called up. If he rips through AAA like he did the lower minors, I would imagine it'd be sooner than later. I know some people bring up, well, White Sox are rebuilding. Why would they want to rush him? But
it's not
about rushing him. It's about him proving he's ready. And we have the same conflict with George Springer. He ended up getting called up mid-April that year.
Oh, I have a lot to say about George Springer. I look forward very much to talking about that on the outfield preview, which will either be tomorrow, Friday, that is, or next week. Who's your favorite late round flyer? When you look at the average draft position, you know, I would have said Jake Lamb. He's the 19th third baseman off the board, but he's going in round 14. That's not quite late enough. But after that, Ryan Healy, Hernan Perez, Moncada, Jerko, Castellanos, Jungho Gong, Moustakas, Drury, Reyes, Eugenio Suarez, Gurriel, Sandoval, Solarte. Solarte is going incredibly late right now in ADP. It is unbelievable how many good third basemen there are, how many attractive names there are in, you know, round 18 and later. Do you guys have a favorite?
I love Solarte, but the ADP you're giving is roto and his best format is points. I still think Solarte at 330 overall or whatever is absurd. And he should go in front of about half the guys that you just mentioned. But it's the third base preview, so we have to talk about the mayor of Ding Dong City. Travis Shaw is basically not getting drafted in most leagues. And I think he is worth a final round pick because of the home run upside I've expressed numerous times throughout the preseason.
And you would take Travis Shaw over, let's say, Nick Castellanos or Moustakas?
Yes.
Jungho Gong?
You know, I am hopeful that I don't have to make that decision in a league that I'm going to play out in the near future, but we're doing an NL-only mock today, and yes, I would take Shaw ahead of Gong.
All right,
yeah, that league. Sure, you can't afford to be wrong when the league's that deep.
Can't afford to be Gong.
Yeah.
Scott, you got a favorite?
No, it might be Gong for me in terms of how far he's falling. Risk is justified. I mean, he's facing charges in Korea, and we don't know how that's going to turn out, if he'll be available for the start of the season, if the Pirates will want him. But his power production per plate appearance last year was terrific, even by the position standards. So I think it's worth it with a late-round pick.
Okay. All right. Works for me. Hey, listen, it has come to my attention, this is very bad news, that some of you listeners out there, you don't play fantasy baseball on CBSSports.com. What is going on, people? That is a shame. Now, we've got a few options for you. No matter how you play, there's a game style for you. You can either start a league with custom rules, you can compete for cash in a prize league, or a creator join a free league with standard scoring. Now on CBS Sports, you're going to get exclusive roster tools and instant access to the latest advice and analysis from Scott, from Heath, from Chris, and other experts. Start playing today. Go to cbssports.com/baseball. That's it. cbssports.com/baseball. Sign up. A lot of good stuff there. Quickly, injuries news and notes. Zach Britton dealing with a potential oblique injury, so we will see if that has any impact on one of the top relievers. We'll talk about that next week, I assume. Todd Frazier mentioned his oblique strain and possible oblique... that is an oblique strain for him. And Scott doesn't care. Heath and I seem to care a little bit. Scott's one of Scott's favorite late-round flyers at first base, Josh Bell. He's ahead of schedule after knee surgery. And David Wright, third baseman for the Mets, will not be able to play the field until mid-March, so they're going to take it easy on him. I have very low expectations for him, and I talked about it on the shortstop preview that I had Jose Reyes as a shortstop sleeper. You guys said, well, dummy, he's not shortstop eligible. he might be fairly early in the season, but I think there's going to be plenty of time for Reyes to play.
And that speaks to the depth of the position, too, because, I mean, he was better per game last year than Kyle Seager, than Matt Carpenter.
Really?
Yeah. And that's in points leagues. You might not even think of that as his best format since he's a base stealer, but he's interesting. It's a question of how much he plays, but how could you have any confidence in David Wright holding up with his degenerative spine issue?
Or playing well. I mean, I don't have any faith in him being good. Yeah.
So Reyes is definitely among the candidates for favorite late round pick at the position.
Yeah. Now you mentioned, we haven't talked about Carpenter. You mentioned Reyes scored more head to head fantasy points than Carpenter. Carpenter is going to be first, second, and third base, or per game. Carpenter's going to be first, second, and third base eligible, right?
Yes.
Okay. It should be noted, 78 games for Carpenter before his oblique injury. He was having a career season. He had a 988 OPS. Probably going to come down, but still, he was awesome. And then he hurt his oblique. Carpenter played 51 games after missing a month. He altered his swing because of the pain. That's why obliques are kind of tough, and he had a 726 OPS, so he stunk.
Well, he didn't rest. See?
Well, he rested for a month. He missed a month.
Okay, fair enough.
Better to happen in spring training, certainly.
Yeah.
Anyway, look, Carpenter, you could play him at third, but because the position is so deep, you might move him to first, you might move him to second, and draft a different third baseman later. But he's part of this discussion as well. So, how about your overall strategy, 35 minutes into the podcast? we sort of talked about it. How do you want to approach third base this year?
I'm just going to draft Anthony Rendon in the sixth round.
I mean, it's kind of... The starting point is where you're drafting in the first round, because there's a 1 in 3 chance in a 12-team league you'll wind up with a third baseman right there. So, but if you don't get one of the first rounders, I don't know. Like, there's no reason to reach for anybody at the position since there's so many startable options. I just kind of wait for where the value seems the best. And sometimes that'll be Kyle Seager in the fifth round. Sometimes that'll be Alex Bregman in the seventh round. Sometimes it'll be Todd Frazier in the ninth or tenth round. But there will always be a value pick at the position, and that's who I want.
But are you okay being the last player in your, say, 12-team league to draft a third baseman?
Yeah.
You might end up with Justin
Turner. You know
what
makes sense doing that? Is just be the last player taking one and take both Sano and Franco.
Okay. What about Longoria? You know, I mean, he had such a good year last year, eighth in points, tenth in Roto. Would you take him over Sano and Franco?
Yes, I would.
In Roto, I'd take Sano over him.
Well, Why? I mean, Sano, you're hoping hits 30 home runs. Longoria, you're kind of expecting him to hit 30 home runs,
right? I am not expecting Longoria to hit 30 home runs, no.
After hitting 37 last year?
Like, he did it last year.
It'd be a big fall.
I don't think I would set the over-under on his home runs. I would expect Sano to hit more home runs than Longoria this year. His profile looks like somebody that would hit more home runs. He's at the stage of his career where his total should be increasing as opposed to Longoria should be decreasing. Longoria's was a little bit fluky last year anyway.
I think Longoria, between him, Justin Turner, and Todd Frazier, I kind of see that as a tier. Maybe Anthony Rendon's in that tier for me. Sounds like you have him a tier higher. I think he's probably, of those four, the most likely to regress from last year. But, you know, he was still, he's always been a good power hitter. The batting average has been the real issue.
Well, but Longoria hit 22 and 21 home runs in 2014 and 15, and then 36 last year. You know, I asked you guys earlier the player that you just can't see yourself drafting at third base, and for me it would be Longoria. I don't know. I feel like he has to overachieve to be a top 10 third baseman, and the ceiling's not that high anyway because he hit 36 home runs and he was eighth in points and 10th in roto. You know, right. Just not interested. He's not going to steal any bases. I mean, he stole zero last year. I don't want Longoria. I think I'd rather.
I guess the main appeal is, at least in my experience, like nobody's excited to draft Longoria, so you don't have to pay for him. Like usually when I'm drafting him, it's not as my third baseman. It's as a utility player. It's as a corner infielder.
Yeah,
and he can give you big power numbers there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes more sense. Okay. How about AL only, NL only? You want to touch on that? You guys did an AL only on Tuesday. You'll do an NL only today. Does it change a lot? Or is this in a deeper league? So even if it's 14 teams, 16 teams, is this a position that it's really good to wait at because it is the deepest, it seems?
The thing I noticed in our AL only, and judging by the Solarte, Gong, Shaw group, I think it'll be the same way in the NL only. I took a unique approach where I had several pitchers and outfielders early in that draft, and I also had Jonathan LaCroix early, and I did not have anybody at first, second, third, or short. And I was going through the positions to see who was left, and there was a lot more value left at third base, even in AL only.
Right.
I would expect that to be similar in an AL only as well. So yeah, I don't mind waiting on this position in the league specific. Yeah. You gotta wait somewhere.
We keep talking about waiting. Yeah, sorry, Scott. We keep talking about waiting, but don't be afraid to take. Don't be afraid to take one of those three or four guys, depending on how you want to use Machado in the first round.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing to remember. Like, you can wait at third base, but third base may be the most likely position where you're going to get your utility player this year, your DH.
Right.
So if you go in with the mindset, I can draft multiple third basemen, then that might be the better way to look at it than how long can I wait? Because there are more than enough to go around, absolutely. And so you'll probably want to roster more than one.
Okay. But
if it's a situation where, you know, a league-specific format where you may be inclined to only draft one, like, I don't know, one of the things I've noticed, and you know, it's a case where you have Anthony Rendon where in your rankings, Heath, at third base?
Like sixth.
And I have him 13th. And, like, he's good. I'd be fine with Anthony Rendon in my starter, and yet there's that big gap between the two of us. I have, I think, Kyle Seager as my sixth third baseman. I can't say with 100% assurance Anthony Rendon won't have a better season than Kyle Seager this year, which I don't mean as a knock on Seager either. It's just, beyond the top four that are going in the first round, there's such a long list of third basemen who could put up maybe not quite the same flavor of numbers, but the same caliber of numbers. And so that kind of speaks to the depth, even in those league-specific formats.
Flavor. I think that's the first. I like it.
Well, you know what I mean. Like, yeah. Todd Frazier's not going to put up the same numbers as Kyle Seager, but they could be just as valuable, the kind of numbers he puts up.
Okay.
If
so,
different.
Yeah. I think we've probably touched on these guys, but just so we can get into ADP a little bit more, let's do sleepers, breakouts, and busts a little quicker than we typically do. Heath, give me your favorite sleeper third baseman, even if it's someone we've already brought up.
Ding Dong City.
Travis Shaw. Okay. That's a late sleeper. And I don't think it's a very good pick because I just don't think he's relevant yet. I could see it, but there are so many guys that I feel like you should go a little bit higher end, like Sano or Franco would be.
That's not a sleeper. Everybody knows about them.
All right, fine.
Everybody knows about them.
Travis Shaw.
They could be breakouts.
But is everybody counting on them to the level they should?
You don't think they should be counted on as a starting third baseman?
No.
But you might.
So, no. I will pick one of them as a breakout.
All right.
Okay, fine. Scott, your sleeper.
Well, we've already talked about Moncada. I think that's a good one. I think Reyes is a good one. A guy we haven't mentioned yet, and forgive me that it's even lower than Heath's, is Brandon Drury, who...
I think it's a bad pick. He's not even relevant.
He could... You know, it's certainly not a points league, a head-to-head lineup where there's just the one third baseman in the utility spot. But when you get into deeper leagues like than that, bigger lineups, I think based on the comments I've seen out of the Diamondbacks this offseason, he's the favorite to be the starting second baseman. And of course, he's also already eligible at third. And the power production he showed as a part-timer last year leads me to believe he could be like a poor man's
Nismani Tomas?
No, I was actually thinking more like Justin Turner. I don't think he will be Justin Turner, but a poor man's version. Somebody who, specifically in those roto leagues, could put up comparable home run, RBI, and run totals, potentially.
Okay, it's Brandon Drury we're talking about.
Yep.
Scott, how about a breakout?
Breakout for me is Bregman, which I think we've covered well, but I don't... Like, he's actually in my breakouts column. I do like him a lot. I like the upside a lot. I don't want to undersell the risk, which is why I prefer Kyle Seager, going back to that discussion. But, yeah, just the kind of bat control he showed in the minors and surprising with the level of power he did, and at least that part translated to the majors, makes me think the ceiling is awfully high.
Yeah, with Bregman, would Bregman be the fourth, or, well, no, because Machado. Would Bregman be the fifth third baseman you would take in a dynasty league, ahead of VR, ahead of Carpenter, ahead of Seager, Beltre, all those guys?
Yes.
Okay.
I can flatly say yes to that dynasty league where there's lots of keepers, little turnover. Yeah, I think Bregman would be fifth after the four obvious first round choices.
Heath Cummings, a breakout third baseman, please.
Yeah, I think, I'll just easily go with Miguel Sano. When you put his type of hard contact, which is over 40%, and his type of fly ball rate, which is over 40%, you're looking at a hitter that could absolutely profile as somebody that could hit 40-plus home runs in the major leagues. I don't know that there is a ceiling on how many home runs Miguel Sano could hit.
And I just want to throw Jake Lamb's name into this discussion, so we haven't spoken about him. He is... currently the 19th third baseman off the board in average draft position on Fantasy Pros. He's going in round 14. I've seen him much later than that in our drafts. And Lamb got hurt last year, and after he got hurt, it's kind of like what happened to Matt Carpenter. First 94 games, Jake Lamb had a 959 OPS. He cannot hit lefties. He cannot hit lefties. He's terrible against lefties. In his last 57 games after his hand injury, Lamb had a 192 batting average and a 654 OPS. So I understand that the lefty thing is bad, and, you know, I don't know that he's going to sit against lefties because he didn't sit that much against lefties last year, but he might, and I think that would make him only a roto guy and not a head-to-head, even category. You don't want a guy sitting in your head-to-head leagues. But anyway, I think Lamb really showed us something last year, and I think there's breakout potential. Agree or disagree?
Agree. He does have breakout potential. I'm not super excited about investing in it because I think there's a lot of downside there too, but I hear your argument.
All right.
Yep, I agree.
Give me a bust, Heath.
Todd Frazier.
Okay.
Batting average isn't coming up. He's going to strike out a bunch, and his home runs are going to crash.
Okay. Crash through outfield scoreboards all around baseball.
Yeah, and he's going to get traded to some park where it's huge. He loses all of his home runs. It's going to be awful.
Scott White.
Adrian Beltre, just from the perspective, he's going into his age 38 season, and he had nearly doubled up his home run total from the previous year. After 2 years of sub 20, he jumped back up to 32. I think there is certainly risk of reaching for him. Again, I'd be thrilled to take him in round, what is it, 6 or 7? But
seven.
A lot of bust potential earlier than that.
And I wouldn't be thrilled to take him when you consider that Frazier, Bregman, and Rendon especially Bregman and Rendon are going just after Beltre. I think I would not want to take, I would rather take Beltre in like round 8 or 9 after those guys are gone.
Right. It gets murky when you try to combine your experience with what the ADP data shows.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. I mean, you're used to doing one thing in all your drafts and you can rely on that, but then ADP says, no, you can't. So, anyway.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We should probably listen
to ADP. In a vacuum, round 7 sounds good for Beltre.
All right. So, speaking of ADP, which stands for average draft position, and when I give out rounds on ADP, it's based on a 12-team league. Here is a look at ADP. Chris Bryant, 3rd overall, as mentioned. He is going ahead of Jose Altuve. Would you guys take, so it's Trout, Betts, Bryant right now. I mean, flip a coin. It depends on who's drafting, but would you take Bryant 3rd overall or would you take him after that?
No, I have him like 6th overall.
Yeah, I think I have him 6th overall too. I'd rather have Altuve. I'd rather have Betts. I'd rather have Trout. I'd rather have Arenado.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You guys like Arenado better.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that makes sense. I can't really find an argument against Arenado. I can't find an argument against Bryant either, except in a points league, he strikes out so much. But, yeah. Anyway, Arenado was a little better last year. So Bryant, 3rd overall. He's also outfield eligible, which helps. Arenado, 4th or 5th overall. Machado, 8th overall. Donaldson, 11th overall. Would you guys take Clayton Kershaw or Josh Donaldson?
Donaldson.
Donaldson.
Okay. That's it for a while. So those 4 are all going in the first round. Jonathan Villar is going about 30th overall, so that's round 3 in a 12-team league. And we spoke about him on shortstop, and you're going to want to play Villar at shortstop. Kyle Seager, round 5. Matt Carpenter, round 6. This is all Roto, by the way, average draft position. Adrian Beltre, round 7. Todd Frazier, round 7. Bregman, round 8. Rendon, round 8. So we've got Seager in round 5. Carpenter in round 6. Who would you rather have, Carpenter or Seager?
Carpenter.
Yes.
And Carpenter has more eligibility as well.
Yep.
Beltre round 7. Frazier round 7. Bregman round 8. Rendon round 8. Scott, as the Frazier guy, do you like him better than Bregman and Rendon? I was surprised. You like him better than Rendon, but do you like him better than Bregman? I was surprised that Frazier's going ahead of those two.
Yeah, I'm surprised. That he's at least he's going ahead of Bregman. I'd take him before Rendon, but Bregman. I don't think the downside is enough for Bregman to pass up the upside if you have a chance on it in round 8 or maybe even round 7. So I would say that order would be different for me.
All right, so we're up to Rendon at the end of round 8. Then all right. Here's what point I want to make. You take out Machado, you take out VR, because those guys are going to play shortstop for you. We're 9 deep at third base. Now, as much as it is a deep position with great options at corner infield and utility, I don't know how comfortable you're going to be. Okay, we'll see. You tell me, how comfortable are you with the following guys rounding out the top 12 being your starting third baseman? Evan Longoria in round 9, Justin Turner round 10, Jose Ramirez round 11, Miguel Sano round 11.
Sano's the one I can say I'm not comfortable with because I don't trust him to. I mean, look what he did last year. He wasn't really starter worthy last year and had trouble holding on to the job. So. The others I'm okay with. Jose Ramirez is kind of a tough sell in Roto because there's so much power at the position. Are you sacrificing too much there? But at the same time, he gives you some steals. He gives you some batting average at a point in the draft where it's hard to get those. So I think he's okay. You just have to figure out how to compensate for him.
Yeah, looking at it from a Roto perspective, I'm going to say the exact opposite thing. But Turner is being drafted exactly where I have him. Sano's going around later than where I have him. Longoria is going a round or two earlier than where I have him. And Ramirez is going like 3 or 4 rounds earlier than what I have him. So we agree on Ramirez.
I've been taking, he's going 3 or 4 rounds. So you take him in around 14, 15, you're saying? That's how long you'd need to take Jose Ramirez?
Ramirez, 13.
I've, in points I've taken him early as round 9. In Roto, I don't know. I might take him in round 10. The thing about him, and I mentioned it earlier, is the state of the outfield at this stage of the draft is such that you're more likely to draft him there, I think, as
yeah,
your
this
second
is, this
or third outfield.
Yeah, this is like the Steven Piscotty stage.
Yeah.
I'd much rather have Piscotty.
So, like, why do we think that, that Jose Ramirez just sort of peaked last year? And let me just give his numbers real quick. Again, Ramirez was the 9th best third baseman in points, 11th in Roto, and eventually I'll find his numbers. He batted .312 with 11 home runs, 76 RBIs, 84 runs, 22 steals, and 46 doubles with three triples. He also was amazing after the All-Star break. So I don't know. Like, can he carry his big second half when he had a .329 batting average, a .509 slugging percentage? Can he carry? Can Jose Ramirez carry that into his age 24 season and put up better numbers?
I'm thinking he's more of like a 280, 290 hitter that really, really, really is going to need those 20 stolen bases to be special in any one category.
I like him a little more for batting average. I think he's probably one of the safer bets for a 300 batting average that you'll find, which isn't to say he definitely will hit 300, but if the downside's like 290, I mean, that's batting average help assured. I don't see him improving because I don't know that he has... Like, I'm surprised he hit for as much power as he did last year. So how much better can he get? The fact he's 24, I mean, maybe I'm underselling him in that regard, but when somebody already exceeds my expectations by that much, I have trouble asking more from them.
I don't know this for sure. I'm looking, but I cannot imagine that anyone hit 300 with a lower hard contact rate than Ramirez had last year. He was at 26%, which is ridiculously low.
Okay. So I'm starting to formulate my strategy at the position right now. Like, I think I know what I want to do. I want one of the top three if I can get him. But I need to see where in the second round I can get Votto, Encarnacion, or Miguel Cabrera. And that could, you know, determine, do I go third? Because I would love to go third base, first base, and get an elite guy at each position. If I don't feel like I can get one of those first basemen, it might change my strategy in the first round since third base is so deep. But I also think I'd like to get someone in the Bregman, Rendon, you know, certainly Carpenter, Seager, that group. I don't know that I want to wait for Longoria, Jose Ramirez, Justin Turner, Sano to be my starter. So if I miss out on the three elites, and I'm not including Machado, I might make sure I get someone in that second group of Carpenter, Seager, Beltre, Bregman, Rendon, Frazier. I'd feel more comfortable with that.
Yeah, I did look it up, and I couldn't find the 300 hitters, but there were 15 qualified hitters last year that had a lower hard contact rate than Jose Ramirez. 14 of them had a lower BABIP. Cesar Hernandez was the only one that had a higher BABIP than him.
I just wonder, like, does it matter when a guy is 24 years old? He did that as a 23-year-old. That doesn't matter. Can we? Because let's not put a ceiling on it.
Well, like, the argument you were making for Miguel Sano or Michael Franco made more sense to me because he at least had an average batted ball profile.
Yeah. Okay.
Ramirez, like, just looks like he did some good things. He had a good line drive rate. I'm not saying he was awful, but. Like
was his soft contact rate low? Did he just have a lot of medium contact?
He did have a lot of medium contact.
Which,
yeah, know, he plays in a good park.
I don't know exactly what to make of strength of contact yet. I mean, it sounds like hitting it harder would be a good thing, right? I just don't know how strong that correlation is. Can't really speak to that.
Let's keep going here. By the way, Heath, why don't you sum up in 20 words or less my philosophy on drafting third baseman, what I just said.
What you just said.
As you were looking up the Jose Ramirez stat. What was the crux of what I said?
I think that, like, if you have the pick and it's available, you'd like to get one of those top four third basemen in the first round.
Well, top three. I'm not including Machado. Right.
You're not including Machado because you're going to play him in VR at shortstop.
Uh-huh.
You don't want to take that group around Todd Frazier just because he's too much. You'll just wait and take be one of the last guys to take a third.
No, that's not really what I said. I kind of want to, if I don't get one of the top three, I want to get someone in the second group, the Seager, Carpenter, you know, Bregman, Rendon, Frazier group. So
I was pretty close.
You got a 50%. All right, as we keep going here, I'll say some names. You tell me who excites you. We got Eduardo Nunez in round 12, Michael Franco in round 12. You'll play Nunez at short. Franco around 12. Javier Baez. So Javier Baez going ahead of Jake Lamb, ahead of all the guys that we talked about, the Drurys, Moustakas, Castellanos, Jung Ho Gong. Is that okay for Baez?
No. No, he's, and this never happens in our drafts, but for whatever reason, his ADP, according to Fantasy Pros, is really high.
And I'm looking on CBS. He has he's definitely being drafted lower on CBS, 187, which is what, right around the 15th round?
Yeah. 16.
So, yeah. I mean, he's definitely being drafted, which is probably because we all have him ranked lower than others in the industry.
Yeah. I mean, it's taken a leap on him playing regularly. It's taking a leap on him making the growths in the power department. Like, if it's just taking his numbers at face value and assuming he's playing every day, which you can't, then that's still too high. You know, yeah. Like, you're counting on him taking this big leap forward. He may, but there's no reason to spend on it like that.
All right, that's Javier Baez. I'm going to finish the show with this. I'm going to say a name. You give me a quick, and I mean quick, thought.
Quick.
Ryan Healy.
I like him. Cheap AL, that sort of way. Not confident in either the batting average he put up or the power numbers he put up last year.
Yeah, I am extremely conflicted.
All right, it's Ryan Healy. Jed Jerko.
I don't buy it.
Mostly I don't trust the playing time, so.
A lot of Jerko's production was in, I don't know, like 2 weeks, and then he was pretty terrible after that, except for some power. Hernan Perez.
When's he going to play?
Yeah, I think he'll play a lot for a reserve because he can play so many places, and it's not like the Brewers have stalwarts all over the diamond. But other than cheap steals in Roto, I don't know what he's worth.
Unless something major changes, he may be one of those guys that's pretty close to the majors lead in games minus games started. He's going to come into a lot of games.
Nick Castellanos.
Just not really moving the needle at this position. He's fine in an AL-only sort of way. Probably going to hit 20 home runs with an okay batting average, but no walks and just not the complete package just isn't quite good enough.
Probably underrated.
Nick Castellanos. All right. Mike Moustakas.
Similar.
Yes, except I like the plate discipline a little more, but he has health concerns.
And finally, Yulieski Gurriel.
Yeah. Who knows?
I wouldn't mind having a little bit of Yulieski Gurriel and see where it goes. I can cut him.
Okay. This time I looked something up while paying attention to the conversation. Fantasy Pros has this fun thing where you can look at where we rank on the certain players.
Uh-huh.
In the third base ranking, Scott White is the lowest in America on Javier Baez.
Ah.
I am tied for the second lowest in America. And Chris is tied for the fifth lowest.
Ah, okay. So we don't love Javier Baez here on CBSSports.com. We do love you, and we will be back tomorrow. I don't know. I think maybe outfield part one tomorrow. Might as well maybe that or maybe like a mailbag. And
go two-parter. Okay, mailbag instead?
Maybe.
But definitely two parts on the outfield.
Two parts on outfield, two parts on starting pitcher. We always do that, so...
Okay.
To be determined. Bottom line is we'll have a podcast tomorrow. We look forward to it. Have a good one, everybody. Talk to you on Friday. It's Fantasy Baseball Today.